Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Healing from Lyme Summit. As you can see, I've got host Dr. Tom Horacroft and our special guest, Dr. Elisa Song. Dr. Song is an integrative pediatrician. She's the founder of Healthy Kids, Happy Kids, and she's also a mom. So, Dr. Song, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. We've been chatting offline, guys. So I know Darren and Dr. Tom and Dr. Darren for I don't know how many years, right? This is such an honor.
A while.
Right. Let's not date ourselves just yet.
Doing all the work. So we're here to share some good information.
Well, you know, you're a pediatrician. You've got so much experience of, you know, dealing with all the issues with kids, including Lyme disease. But I think, you know, today we really want to kind of hone in on the gut and the microbiome. And for our little ones, of course, it's just so critically important for so many things. So, you know, what do parents really need to know about their kids' gut microbiome, and why is it just so important?
Well, and, you know, we were talking about how, well, in my mind, as I was preparing for this talk, really thinking about for kids with Lyme, you know, what comes first, their gut microbiome dysregulation, or is it that the infection is perpetuating their gut dysregulation? But what parents really need to understand is in those early stages, you know, in the 0 to 3 to 4 to 5 year age range, it is so key to lay down a healthy gut microbiome. So if you have children who are still in that age, we want to start working on their gut microbiome. And why is that? You know, of the 70 trillion, 100 trillion microbes in your gut, they make up the largest interface with the outside world, all the pathogens and toxins and foods that are passing through you, that's the largest interface with the outside world and your immune system. You know, 70% of our immune system resides in our gut, and our gut microbiome plays a key role in communicating with our immune system to have a healthy response to whatever is passing through, right? Not too little, not too much, and not the wrong thing. And so when our kids' gut microbiome becomes disrupted through any number of reasons, the biggest disruptor that really is the most sudden and acute are antibiotics, but also antacid medications, psychological stress, all the ultra processed foods we're eating. When that gut dysbiosis, that abnormal balance of bugs happen, that sets the stage then for training that developing child's immune system to have unhealthy responses. So our immune system is really our gut microbiome is responsible for telling our immune system how to respond to that thing passing through, right? Do we need to create inflammation? When do we turn off the inflammation? Are we going to have chronic inflammation, or are we going to have the wrong targets of inflammation and have autoimmunity? And this is where I was thinking, well, it is kind of a chicken and egg thing, because we know so many kids are born with disrupted gut microbiomes already because mamas don't have a healthy gut microbiome. When they develop chronic Lyme disease, chronic tick-borne diseases, autoimmunity, neuropsychiatric symptoms, they have the wrong response to that bug. Is it because they were set up with a dysbiotic gut microbiome to begin with, right? It doesn't matter. It is what it is right now. If your child is suffering from chronic Lyme disease and, you know, really needing all of these different supports, including antimicrobials, we need to understand how to set that gut microbiome back on the right path so that your child's immune system can get back on the right path, get out of perhaps an autoimmune state, get out of a hyperinflammatory state, get out of a chronic inflammatory state. And it's not just the gut immune system connection that's so important. It's also the gut-brain connection. The gut, especially for the baby, that developing brain, all the synaptic connections, and the changing gut microbiome, they mirror each other. And in fact, the way that the gut microbiome is shaped really informs how their brain development is occurring. And we know that antibiotics given within the first early years of toddlerhood can increase that child's risk of anxiety, depression, mental health concerns by up to 50% when they're older. And when we're talking about immune health, like eczema, asthma, you know, allergies, atopic conditions that are so common, getting antibiotics or antacid medications in those first 6 months of life sets the stage for all of that immune dysregulation by the time they're 4. So knowing that, if we can do whatever we can to support a healthy gut microbiome, no matter what treatments your kid's on, they're going to come out healthier in the long run. And that's the point of treatments, right? I mean, like Tom, you were saying just before, we want to make sure that whatever we're doing for our kids in the acute crisis of their illness, that when they're quote healed, they're in the best state possible. Like we are moving them towards that thriving state that they're better than before, right?
I think it's so critical, Lisa. And one of the things I think about is like always like especially with the recent pandemic, I'm like, become the world's worst viral host, become the world's worst bacterial host. And how do you do that? I mean, to me, you start with the microbiome. So what do we do? So a lot of our parents may be listening going, hey, my kid either may have some PANS or PANDAS, and maybe we can jump into PANS, PANDAS, Lyme, and like what we should do in the process. But what about if we have healthy kids, relatively healthy kids, but we do know that they had some ear infections. They got some antibiotic treatments when they're younger. And our parents are like, oh crap. Like I thought I was listening for little Johnny because he has PANS, but also now my little girl or my little boy, I want to make sure that they're not a setup like maybe their sibling was or their friend was. What are some of the things if your kid are, you know, cause I don't want parents to start to feel bad. I mean, if your kid needed an antibiotic, you got to use it. But in that kind of 6 month to 4 year range, or even a little earlier, what are some of the things that we can be doing at home if someone's already been exposed to an antibiotic and we want to just make sure they're in really good shape?
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, it's so important for parents if your child has been on antibiotics. I mean, both of my kids were on antibiotics in the first 4 to 5 weeks of life. And this is me, you know, as a holistic pediatrician, integrated pediatrician who does everything I can to prevent needing unnecessary antibiotics. But they're necessary sometimes, right? They can be life-saving sometimes. And, you know, a four-week-old who has a UTI, oh, that was my daughter, right? A five-week-old, my son, who had, I mean, was exposed to strep in the family, and he had, I mean, he ruptured his eardrum, had ear discharge that was growing out strep. Would I ever say don't do antibiotics? No, I would say you need those antibiotics. However, let's then take that functional medicine integrative approach, understand the unwanted complications from antibiotics, the unintended adverse effects. And it's so common. I mean, by the time there was one statistic I read and it was astonishing to me, but by the time kids are two, somewhere up to 70% of kids have had at least one antibiotic prescription. Wow. Many have had multiple, right? And unfortunately, about up to 70% of the time in the studies, those antibiotics are unnecessary. They're given for viral infections, right? They're given for a cold that it's not going to do anything for. They're given for ear infections where we know that the majority of them will clear on their own, even if they have a bacterial component. So I'd say the first thing, you know, as you have this child in front of you, maybe they have had antibiotics in the past, but let's see what can we do to prevent unnecessary antibiotics in the future. I would say talk to your doctor, right? You got to ask these questions. I have a list of questions that I give to parents on what to ask to know whether or not the antibiotic is necessary. Because this research paper was also astonishing, right? The more you dive into the research, the more you're like, what? So this paper showed that doctors, right, are more likely to prescribe antibiotics when they believe that the patient expects or wants them, even if that doctor doesn't believe that there's a bacterial infection and doesn't Crazy. Believe that the antibiotic is going to be effective, right? So simply by you asking the questions, hey doc, is this really necessary? Not in a combative way, not in a, you know, just saying, hey, I'm just wondering, is this really necessary? Right? What would happen if I waited on taking the antibiotics? Right? Is there anything else I can do besides these antibiotics? Just by opening that door, that physician, if they believe that the chances are this is a virus, they're more likely to step back and say, yeah, you know what, we can wait and watch and see. Or if you have amazing doctors like Dr. Darren or Dr. Tom, or you have a holistic pediatrician, you can try homeopathy or herbs or you know, essential oils, acupuncture, these different tools, right? Now, when your kids have had antibiotics though, or they need an antibiotic, your doctor says, look, it's really necessary, then there are several things we can do to maintain a healthy and resilient microbiome. part of it, a little bit, is about giving probiotics. Okay, that's the thing that a lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to throw, you know, 100 billion, 450 billion, 900 billion colonies of probiotics, you know, at my intestine or my kid's intestines when I take or they take an antibiotic. And yes, that is can be very helpful. But what's fascinating is this one study that looked at a cohort of people who had antibiotics, and they separated them out. One group did nothing, right? They just kind of took the antibiotics and waited and watched and saw what happened. Another group was given probiotics, and the other group was given a fecal transplant. The quickest recovery was in that group with the fecal transplant, but not everyone's going to get a poop transplant, right? The slowest microbiome recovery actually occurred in the group that received the probiotic supplement. Now, there were a lot of problems with this study. I mean, there were a lot, the probiotics were not given with prebiotics. And, you know, there are other factors. I still think probiotics are an important part, but it just goes to show you, it's not the only thing we should be doing. And when you want to recover your child's gut microbiome, the best place to start, honestly, is with the healthy, resilient microbiome in the first place, because your gut wants to go back to that, right? Your gut always wants to go back to the place it was. So, and yes, sometimes we start off with not such a healthy gut microbiome, but this is a time when your kids are young to lay those foundations. And those foundations, and this is not rocket science, none of this is rocket science, but, you know, starting with food as medicine and also understanding what food is really poison to your microbiome, you know, getting in all the, you know, this is kind of cliche, but get those rainbow phytonutrients, get in your fiber. We have a huge fiber deficit in our country, right? I think, you know, if all adults in America ate in one apple a day, that's like 3 grams of extra fiber a day, I think we would be saving like $80 billion of healthcare costs, right? Due to constipation and functional abdominal pain, right? So it's just getting up that fiber. And of course, fermented foods, hardly anyone eats fermented foods. So that's where we look at what can we get in. But we also, in our ultra modern, ultra processed world, we have to understand all of those FDA approved food additives, they can directly trigger leaky gut. In fact, food emulsifiers, those are the things that keep your ice cream from getting into a goopy mess, right? They keep your, you know, protein bars from falling apart and turning into glue, you know, in the package. So if those emulsifiers in Japan have been, the rise in the use of emulsifiers has been directly correlated with the rise in autoimmunity. And these emulsifiers have been found to increase, directly cause harm to the tight junctions and increase zonulin, so increase leaky gut. And in fact, these emulsifiers are actually FDA approved in quantities known to be unsafe in the ready to feed liquid infant formulas. I mean, this is just, it's horrendous, right? That we are not aware of this. But now you have the opportunity to become aware. So when we're looking at foods like any packaged foods, and I'm not saying never eat out of a package, but just understand we want packaged foods that are clean, that don't have all of these chemical sounding names, that don't have the food additives, clean, few ingredient packaged foods. And you can, the example I give, I'm sure, Tom, that you guys don't have Takis in your home, right? Talia probably has never had
Takis. I've never even heard of, yeah.
So, and Darren, have you had Takis? I give this example because my son, right, he's 11 and he's now old enough. He can go downtown, hang out with his friends, go to the store, and his friends love Takis. They're these rolled tortilla chips with red dye number 40, you know, color surrounding them. This artificial chili lime flavor, right?
Yes. Sounds like a bagel.
It just makes my stomach curl. And I'm sorry, guys, if you guys are eating Takis, that's okay. I bring this up because your kids can have Takis like foods that are healthier swaps. Like Trader Joe's has a version, this rolled corn tortilla chips, that uses paprika for the color, the red color, and doesn't have artificial flavoring, right? And better yet, there's a company called Takis that has similar, that's even cleaner than the Trader Joe's version. So just being savvy about what you're putting into your kid's body, because even if we can recover your child's, even when we recover your child's gut microbiome after antibiotics with different supplements that we can go into, if you guys like, you know, prebiotics, probiotics, they still need to maintain that. And the only way to maintain that is through, you know, getting a gut gut-friendly diet in place, also a gut-friendly lifestyle, right? We know that psychological stress can, really harm the gut microbiome as much or maybe even worse than any food or inflammatory factor that you can put in. Making sure that like sleep and hydration and movement, all of those affect your gut microbiome, and vice versa, gut microbiome improves your sleep and your movement and your, you know, psychological mental state.
You know, I want to ask about probiotics specifically. I think this is really confusing for people because there's so many probiotics on the market, different strains. You know, when I was a med student at Bastyr, we did a little study. We took 20 probiotics. Some of them were professional, some of them were over the counter, some were refrigerated, some were not. And we sent them off to a lab to have them evaluated for, did it have the stuff on the label as it advertised and in the quantity that they advertised? And out of the 20, can you imagine how many were actually had the amount and what was actually on the label? Out of the 20, one.
Wow.
Culturelle, by the way. Culturelle was the only one,
yeah.
Which is the most highly, you know, researched probiotic in the world, as far as I'm aware of. But that was it. But it kind of, you know, feeds into this thing. It's like, you know, people are spending, you know, a lot of money on, you know, I mean, I think the thought is if it's got more colonies, it must be better, which isn't true at all. So, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, how do parents, you know, help pick a good probiotic for their kids? And I think that varies too on age, right?
It totally varies.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, I have not found a probiotic supplement that I love, 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 which is why I have a few different ones in my office, which is why it's my mission to create one, you know, for kids that is really going to be worthwhile. But it does depend on age. In the 0 to 2 to 3.5 year age range, the first thousand days, let's think about, you know, the first 0 to 3, bifidobacteria species are really the most important. It's all of these butyrate producing species. And so you want a probiotic that is very, very high in different bifidobacter strains. And here's the thing, when we talk about probiotics, it's also really important to have, ideally, the specific strain. So have a strain specific probiotic for the indication that you want. There are some specific strains of Bifidobacter and Lactobacillus that the research has shown support gut microbiome recovery after antibiotics. Even some of the spore-based probiotics, like some of the Bacillus species, but even then there are specific strains. And it's hard to know sometimes because you pick up a bottle and it might say, you know, Lactobacillus acidophilus. Well, there are a ton. There's like the NCFM, whatever, 09. I mean, you'll see all these different ones. So you can ask the manufacturer, do they have those, you know, can they tell you what strains are in them? But to be honest, I mean, imagine the 100 trillion microbes in your gut. And every single day, it seems like there's another benefit of a particular strain being identified. It's going to be nearly impossible to find the perfect probiotic because it depends on what's going on with you. Now, that being said, the reason why Culturelle that you mentioned, Darren, Culturelle is a specific Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG that has, as Dr. Darren said, been really the most widely studied probiotic, especially for children. And in fact, that particular Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG was found to be effective if moms took during the third trimester and for the duration of nursing, if they had a family history of eczema, asthma, and atopy, to significantly reduce their baby's risk of developing atopy. And they took a cohort of babies, 0 to 6 months of age, gave them Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, this Culturelle, and followed them out. It was a small cohort, but they followed them out into their teen years. And there was, compared to a similar cohort in the population, none of those kids developed ADHD, none of those kids developed autism, right? So, but Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, that particular strain is held really tightly, the patent, by this company in Denmark, I believe, called Christian Hansen. Super quality controlled, you know, they culture out all of their Lactobacillus GG. And it'll be interesting to see now that the patent has lifted, other companies have Lactobacillus GG, if it's going to be the same effect. Right. But that being said, you know, when, you know, so for babies under 3, you want more Bifidobacter, some Lactobacillus. And then as they get older, over 2 to 3 years of age, your child can take the same probiotic as an adult. I mean, it takes on a very adult-like pattern. So if all of the kids in your household are over three, then you can all take the same probiotic. And given that there's not one that's ideal, what I look for is, especially when we're trying to recover the gut microbiome, one that has as many different strains as possible. So, you know, antibiotics, if you imagine, they don't care what they kill. They don't care if they're killing strep or Lyme or your gut bugs. They're just going to wipe out everything, right? So all of those, almost all of those good gut bugs. And what's interesting, though, some antibiotics like Cipro, and I'm trying to think in the studies what other antibiotics were looked at, they seem to preferentially kill the beneficial flora and actually support growth of, you know, abnormal flora, like, you know, some of the Clostridia species we don't want. And we know, I mean, that's why C. diff can be common after antibiotic, you know, lots of antibiotic rounds. But many, many species, you know, have trying to have a multi-strain probiotic. I do recommend prebiotics for most, you know, for most kids, unless they have certain strains like Klebsiella or Citrobacter, I might be a little careful. They now have human milk oligosaccharide analogs, these HMOs, that are found in abundance in breast milk. And the most common HMO in breast milk is 2FL. There's another one called LNNT, and there are many, many of these human milk oligosaccharides that now some formula manufacturers are actually putting into their baby formulas, because the benefits of these HMOs, these human milk oligosaccharides, to act as prebiotics to support the growth of all of the beneficial bacteria that we want babies to have is tremendous. And even for adults and older kids, there have been benefits found. So I've been looking for probiotics that do have this, you know, 2FL, LNNT, there's another couple of others. They're not that easy to find, but if you could find them, that would be ideal for your kids under three. And then for your kids over three, you've been looking for, you know, inulin is one of the most commonly used prebiotics, but there are some that have really good studies behind them, like, you know, XOS, the xylooligosaccharides. There's one called the Microbiome X, that the benefit of this prebiotic is that it supports the production of butyrate. And for a lot of people, they've heard of prebiotics, they've heard of probiotics. They're not so familiar with postbiotics. And postbiotics are the byproducts. You know, if you have this probiotic here, this little bacteria, and they're munching away, fermenting this fiber of these prebiotics, then they produce these byproducts like butyrate that have tremendous, tremendous metabolic and immune and brain benefits. And some people think that's why fermented foods have such benefit, because of all the postbiotics that are in those fermented foods. So this Microbiome X prebiotic supports butyrate production. You could take butyrate. I'm seeing some probiotics that now have butyrate in them, and then some supplement companies that have butyrate supplements. For kids, it is almost impossible to give them a butyrate supplement unless they can swallow pills, because it is stinky and it does not taste very good, right? But if you can get in butyrate producing probiotic strains, and also prebiotic support butyrate, then even better.
Well, that's a great point. I think I'll just add, you know, like I said, not all probiotics are created equal, and often you get what you pay for. I mean, I warn my patients about, be careful with buying probiotics on Amazon in particular, just because a lot of their warehouses aren't climate controlled. I know I was talking with my friends at Allergy Research, because I created some supplements for Lyme disease with them, and their agreement with Amazon is that the supplements have to withstand 180 degree temperature, because they have some warehouses that are out in the middle of the desert. Yeah. And I guess they're not climate controlled. And if that's a probiotic, that's probably not good, considering a lot of these have to be refrigerated. So just be careful about where you're sourcing your probiotics to.
Yeah, I mean, that's 100%. I mean, you know, because when you're looking on Amazon, and then, I mean, Amazon's amazing, right? I have a friend who moved to Portugal, and I said, what do you miss the most? And she's like, Amazon. Because it's, I mean, during the pandemic, most of us, I mean, many of us, we lived off of our Amazon shipment. But unless the manufacturer has their own online store,
right?
Like, I might buy something from Designs for Health on their Amazon store, because I know that there's more control over how the supplement is stored and shipped out and expiration dates are checked. If you're buying from like Judy's health food store and they're carrying, I would really avoid that, right? Because you don't know, as Dr. Darren said, the storage and sometimes I've had parents say that the expiration date looked like it was a little funny, like maybe a little adulterated. So you just have to be careful with that.
So what about kids that are on herbals? You know, we kind of expect if you're on, you know, amoxicillin, Augmentin, doxycycline, there's going to be some collateral damage to the gut bugs. But, you know, a lot of our kids, you know, we're using herbs to treat Lyme disease. You know, is your feeling that, you know, people on herbs should still be on probiotics?
Yes. Now, I have seen kids who have been on multiple herbals, herbal antimicrobials that have a significant amount of gut dysbiosis from being on herbal antimicrobials. Now, herbs, I think, though, I mean, when they work for infections, and I use herbs too, you know, for kids who have bronchitis or ear infections or whatever it is, they have so many other benefits, though, right? I mean, the whole plant, and, you know, there are going to be some phytonutrients in there, antioxidants, and there's a synergistic combination. So, by far and large, I mean, herbal antimicrobials, I think, would be are preferred when you can use them as part of your treatment regimen. That being said, they can still cause gut dysbiosis, right? I mean, if you look at, I've been using a lot of thyme this winter, you know, for spreading the respiratory tract, but it's a great antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral. Well, I mean, that's going to, you know, it can help for bacterial ear infections. I've had it be helpful for kids with strep, but if it's going to kill bacteria, it's going to kill your gut microbes too, potentially. So you just have to be mindful of that. And the question I get too is, you know, when you're taking probiotics, now, of course, you know, for kids who have PANS or PANS or kids who have chronic Lyme or tick-borne infections, it's not just a 10-day course and they're done, right? I mean, they're going to be on these regimens for a prolonged period of time. But let's say you have a kiddo who is on a 7-day course for bronchitis or a 10-day course for an ear infection. I've had parents question like, oh, should I wait to take the probiotics until after they're done? Because doesn't it interfere with the antibiotics, right? Doesn't it make the antibiotics less effective? I mean, I've had these questions and that's not true at all. In fact, when you look at the studies on recovering the gut microbiome, the most effective way to restore your gut microbiome with probiotics is to take them concurrently, you know, during your antibiotic course and afterwards. It can take a month or two or longer to recover your gut microbiome to a healthier state. So start at the same time, but give them away from your antimicrobial, right? At least an hour or two away. And then continue for at least a month or two. Now, if your kids are on antimicrobials for months and months and months of necessity, then I would just keep them on a probiotic and just make sure you're timing it so that it's away from whatever antimicrobial that you're using.
I think that, Elise, it's a great point because so many of the people I see, they need to be on their antibiotic or their herb. And I'm like, bare minimum 3 or 4 months. And if you've been on 6, 8, 9, 12 months, it's just like, we need to be doing a lot of stuff for your gut afterwards. And I mean, I guess one of the things that I see too is like, and I am wondering what you're seeing in your population, but I feel like one of the things you mentioned earlier is to really stay focused on coming into illness, if you will, being as healthy as you can be, because I actually see a lot of pretty non-gut specific antibiotics fixing things like chronic diarrhea, fixing things like chronic constipation. And I'm like, well, is it just that the microbiome is off, or is it that we're actually addressing tick-borne, like Lyme or Babesia, Bartonella in the gut wall, or even mycoplasma that's been found in the gut wall?
Yeah, well, you know, and I would say, you know, that points to the fact that so many of us have dysbiotic guts. I mean, despite, you know, living a healthy lifestyle, despite, you know, doing what we think we're, you know, is our best at maintaining our gut microbiome. And, you know, that can have a lot to do with, it's generations past too, right? It's not just, you know, you're born with this clean slate, this sterile gut microbiome, and boom, you know, you can getting all these good foods and breastfeed and, you know, and have a healthy, you know, have a healthy diet and have an amazing gut microbiome. It's still, you know, we carry that imprint of, you know, our mothers and our grandmothers and even our grandfather's gut microbiome. I mean, it's fascinating. You know, there was one, I'm not going to get the study right, but it was looking at great grandfathers and, you know, having psychological trauma, you know, psychological stress. And in the mothers, then it shifted their gut microbiome, to be less responsive to, a microbiome supporting diet. So even with the healthiest diet, it was harder to maintain a resilient gut microbiome. And this was the grandfather, right? And so it's not even just that, you know, yes, we know that mom's gut microbiome, mom's vaginal microbiome impacts the way the babies are born, will impact how that baby's gut microbiome starts off in life. And you know, in that first, you know, few weeks to months, you know, how that gets shaped. But we know, I mean, it's not just that the sperm has nothing to do with the baby's gut microbiome. It absolutely does. There's imprinting that has taken place. And so, you know, this is where I want to point to one of the biggest pieces, I think, is in disrupting our gut microbiomes and keeping our gut microbiomes in a resistant state, right? A resistant state to getting healthier is really that psychological stress piece, right? We have forgotten how to really manage that. And that has to do, that's the gut-brain connection. That's the vagus nerve. It's why it's so important where, you know, I'll see kids where their gut microbiome improves, their autoimmune condition goes into remission, they're better. The second a psychological stressor hits, they're back to where they were. Right. And so that's not really remission, right? They're not really healed or cured. They're just kind of waiting for the next shoe to drop. And that requires really reconnecting that gut brain connection and optimizing the vagus nerve. And that resilience piece is what then will make your gut microbiome resilient. And I don't think enough people really talk about that in relation to what's going on with the gut microbiome and, you know, how it's really impacting kids' future immune health and future brain health and future metabolic health.
I think one of the things, Elisa, that you remind me of so much, and I want to talk about that beautiful painting in the background there in a second, because one of the things that I'm always blown away about is somebody a bunch of years back coined the term psychobiotics. And wow. I kind of was diving into this. And one of the things I think people don't recognize is that if we take a mouse in a study and we like essentially eradicate and totally dysfunct, whatever their microbiome, we can make it so that they can't create new memories. We can make it so they forget. So all of our, you know, they can't focus. So we're looking at all of our childhood ADHD, you know, our cognitive challenges and struggles, potentially learning in school, but also we can take a mouse that's kind of quote unquote normal and make it acutely anxious by disrupting its gut microbiome just through changing the gut and not directly impacting the brain. But when everybody talks about the gut brain connection, I hear this all the time. I'm like, we forgot an organ. If we look at the major areas in our body, we have three main automatic nervous systems that are autonomous from each other, but work together, which is the brain, the gut, and then to the point of the picture is the heart. And you're talking so much about the psychological stressors. And I know I talked to Dr. Elias earlier in the summit about opening your heart and how the heart is different, but how does that play a role in children's health and kind of getting that gut brain and heart reconnected?
I mean, I think it's everything, right? I think that is, you know, one of the missing pieces for our children. And, you know, frankly, because we as adults, we've forgotten how to, you know, be heart-centered and really manage our stress in a productive, healthy way. What I've been showing kids and teenagers lately, because of course we're in this mental health emergency, this crisis for kids, there's something, you know, in our world, stress has become the next four-letter word, right? It's like stress is something you got to get rid of. Stress, no stress is good. I want to live stress-free. And I'm like, that is probably one of the worst things you could do, right? Because it's just like the word inflammation. It is not a bad thing. It's only bad when it's too much or too little or wrong, right? But our body needs inflammation to recover, you know, from an acute stressor. And we need stress to mount that immune response, to mount an alert response in our brain, and then to recover and get back into a state of higher resilience where our cells remember how to do that again the next time with the next stress, right? Because I mean, there's, of course we're going to be stressed with life and stress. So I was saying, I show this curve, it's called the optimum performance curve. Have you seen that? It's great, right? It's this bell-shaped curve, right? And up on top, performance goes up, okay? Stress goes down and to the right, okay? Am I looking the right way? Should I go like this?
The other way I think worked. It's all good. Okay. We get it.
So performance, you know, levels up, stress levels higher to the right, okay? Or, you know, this way. And so then we have this peak performance curve like this. On this end is very low stress, okay? Hardly any stress. Your life is easy. You're doing everything for your kids. They don't need anything, right? They don't need to pick up after themselves. They're happy, you know, they're upset. You make everything right for them, right? In this area, it's low performance. You develop indifference, apathy, depression, and anxiety, right? And then we get a little bit more stress. And what happens? You have that deadline due, you have a project you're working on, you have things on your mind, and you go into that alert state and you start to perform better, right? If we don't have deadlines, we never get anything done. That makes you perform, right? So there's optimal performance. And then you get to the point where it doesn't stop. There's deadline after deadline after deadline, or friend drama or social drama or whatever, parent drama. Stress goes up, and then you start being wired. You don't perform, you start being wired, anxious, irritable, angry, right? So there's a sweet spot, and we have to recognize that this stress is something that is teaching. Stress is purely a physiologic response to something that's happening. And when we look at it that way, we can say, all right, so this physiologic response, I don't need to avoid it, right? What I need to do is figure out what thing my body or brain is saying I have to get done and accomplish it, and then get back down to, you know, an equilibrium, right? Where I'm managing that stress. What most kids and parents do right now, and kids do this because they learn from us, is avoid stress. I mean, avoidance is the number one way that we have learned to manage stress. And because we think we shouldn't have stress. So I'm a little stressed. I must be anxious. Well, if I'm anxious, maybe I have anxiety. You know, maybe if I have anxiety, I might need some medications, and my friends are on medication. So maybe I need that, right? I have so many teenagers now in high school, because they know so many other kids on Zoloft or Prozac or whatever it is, they feel like they need a medicine because they are anxious and stressed. And so that, if we can help parents and kids understand that stress is something that can be very supportive for ourselves, can actually promote higher resilience and a higher state of happiness, and give them tools like breath work and meditation and mindfulness exercises to get them out of that alarm state and into a calm state where they can assess what's going on and manage that stress, then their gut microbiomes would be healthier, right? Their immune systems would be healthier. They'd be sleeping better. I mean, all those trickle down effects. And I think that, and it doesn't cost any money to do that, right? This is something free that everybody can do. And so, you know, that's where that is really, you know, for kids who get better, get worse, get better, get worse, you got to work on that piece of it, right? That, you know, heart, mind, body, stress connection.
I think, you know, one of the things I think I've struggled in my practice, you know, especially, you know, kids with Lyme disease, kids with chronic illness, you know, they're stressed. They don't feel well. Like, you know, I'm 10 years old. I'm not doing all things my friends are doing. But how much of this is really a family dynamic problem? Because like you said, you know, they're feeding off the parents' stress. Of course, the parents are stressed because they got a sick kid.
Yeah.
So how do we help navigate, you know, I mean, we're kind of treating the parents and the kids at the same time, because, you know, that symbiotic relationship, you know, and how the parents are connected with their children, it's so important that, you know, if parents aren't doing the work, they want to expect the kids to do the work. It just doesn't seem to work out as well. So it's almost like, you know, everyone kind of needs to be on board and helping, you know, deal with stress in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, we are, you know, it's moms and their kids are connected literally, you know, by we each carry each other's cells, right? In our bodies forever and ever and ever. But even dads and their kids, there's that energetic connection, and it's a very real connection. And, you know, it's just like when you have your newborn baby, right? And they're a little cool. You don't know what temperature they are, right? But your body automatically, if you're holding them skin to skin, your body will automatically heat up. Your temperature will raise so that your baby's temperature gets to a normal, healthy temperature. This is, you know, papas and mamas and grandparents too, right? How do we do that, right? How are we that connected? But we are. And all of us have felt this, right? If you, you know, you walk into a room and let's say your friend or your partner is next to you, and you can, if you're in that moment with them, you can know exactly what they're feeling without them saying a word. You know if they're stressed or they're sad or they're pissy or they're whatever it is, right? You know, they don't even have to say a word. Maybe they have a neutral expression on their face, but you can feel that energy vibrating, right? And same thing with your kids. I mean, they're going to pick up immediately. And if you don't believe that they're going to get better, right? That's another big thing, right? If you have that fear that it's nothing's going to work, and you are not taking care of yourself so that your brain is always, always going and you're up all night doing the research on, you know, searching Dr. Google for an answer, you're not eating well, you know, you're just, everything is for your kid. That is not for your kid. That's not, right? That's not serving your child, right? So this is where, you know, a lot of times I have to, you know, have, it's often the mom, right? I have to have the dad say, I don't care what, you know, what your wife is researching right now. At 10 o'clock, take their phone, shut the computer down. It's time to go to bed, right? And just really, I mean, because then you will be present to serve your child. And let's face it, we all share our microbiomes, right? When you kiss your kid, when you drink out of their water, psychological stress can change your gut microbiome within like 48 hours. Right? Just that stress alone. It goes the other way, right? We're talking about the psychobiotics, change your gut microbiome can affect our mood. But just being in that constant alarm state, your microbiome is not going to be healthy. The next time you kiss your child, you might be sharing an imbalanced microbiome. And it's, you know, we just want to, how can we support the whole ecology at home so that your child can get well? And you can get well as a parent. I mean, oftentimes parents also are suffering from their own chronic infections.
I think one of the really interesting pieces for me raising a young human being at the moment is the world, like you touched on, so much of the world wants to label normal experiences as abnormal, like to your point about stress. And it's frustrating because it's like we think that people who are posting on about their experience on social media, whether it's positive or negative, that that's their whole life, right? And so I find that challenging. And to your point on like the parents, I think, you know, Darren and I have gone to some trainings together. We've worked with Michael Burnoff and a bunch of other people, like just people who kind of like are in your face. And this is one of the things I think we want to do, Elisa, with our summit is be a little bit in people's faces and really challenge them to understand that as a parent or as a spouse, your influence over your partner or your children, just your actual physical, not the epigenetics you've been talking about or the I kiss you and you get my microbiome, but literally just like the energetics of living in a field together. Even if your kid's 13, 14 and giving you the bird and they are in the other room, they're on the other side of the wall going like this. They are listening to everything you say, just like your partner is. So like they know when, like you said, when you're full of crap. And you know, like, I just say, like, if I make a mistake, I apologize. If I'm having a bad day, I say, look, like, I'm in a crappy mood. You might want to ask me that question tomorrow. And I don't always succeed at it, but I think your point of like, because the point of like the psychobiotics can help your gut and change your mood, and a bad mood or a bad attitude can change your gut. A good mood can also change your gut.
Yes, absolutely. And this is where, you know, whenever I have this conversation, I can see for some of the kids and for some of the parents, a little bit of a tuning out, right? Because unfortunately, we, like even us here, right, as, you know, functional medicine practitioners, as conventionally trained practitioners, we've kind of trained parents and kids to expect that they need a medicine to get well, that they need a vitamin to get well, that they need a laundry list, a supplement list this long. And sometimes they do need that, yes, yet they also need this piece, right? This energetic, you know, mindful piece. And that's the piece that really most practitioners are not emphasizing is the best medicine that we can give. It is up there, maybe higher than any supplement we can recommend or any prescription that we can write. And so I think getting this message out and getting, you know, for kids and for parents, the words that you use can impact how your body heals and how your immune system heals. So instead of saying, you know, if you get better, we want to talk about when you get better, right? I mean, it's just, it makes a big difference. I mean,
stop calling yourself like a limey and a moldy or whatever. God almighty.
Yeah. It's hard because, you know, and this is where for some kids who have been sick for very, very long, you know, a long time, or adults who have been sick for a very prolonged period of time, it becomes your identity, right? And it becomes, you don't know who you are outside of that illness, or as a parent taking care of a child with a chronic concern, chronic illness, you don't know who you are anymore outside of that caretaker giving all the supplements and going to all the appointments. So it's really important to step back and say, look, this is a part of our journey right now, but I am still a thriving person on the inside, even though I feel like crap some days. And I am still, you know, a woman and a friend and a wife, and, you know, not just this person whose soul, you know, mission right now is everything, you know, about treating my child. So, you know, having that balance, because, you know, then when we go down that rabbit hole of, you know, just trying to, you know, find the next cure, find the next thing that's going to make flip the switch. I see moms who really suffer through that and end up getting sick themselves. And when their kids are finally well, don't trust it, right? This is the other thing too, right? Once you are well, once you're in a place where you feel great and you feel vibrant and you've gotten back your health, it's then learning how to trust that you can stay there. Right. Because then I have some parents who, you know, really wrap their kids in a little bubble because they're just so afraid that every little thing is going to make them regress, make everything come pouring back in. And I get that trauma that you've gone through, but that has to be worked through and a really important piece of healing.
And it also goes to like your comment about like, you know, turning off the computer and the research. It's like so many people are 100% clear that Lyme is not curable. And I'm like, who told you that? Because like, yes, Lyme may be difficult to cure if you're, you know, if for a lot of different reasons. I think people should work with people who are experts and they trust. And if they don't trust their practitioner, maybe move on. But when we're trusting a Facebook group or a Google, you know, search more than the live human being in front of us that we're chatting with, I mean, I just think it's something we have to just be aware of that this does not necessarily serve us. When you're trying to know more than your actual doctor knows, all I know is that I spent like 27 years in a row in school. And then after that, like we were talking before we started, how much effort you put into your book that's coming out, how much effort you put into the blog post you put out. And like, for anyone who doesn't know, like Elisa is like, there's a couple of different strategies online. One is to just send you a bunch of information here and there all the time. And then there's the Dr. Song approach, which is bang out like the world's greatest deep dive on a single topic, like at the beginning of COVID, or what do I, you know, like when I get an email from you, I read it because it doesn't come a lot. But when it comes, it's full of this really, really deep dive. And it's like, work with people like you, you know, who are true experts, and then just go, I am so blessed. I'm so grateful to be with an expert who is doing the research for me, because I know how many soccer games you probably missed in order to do the research to write the book well enough so that it actually is your gift to the world so that moms and dads can help their kids heal. And I think it's just so important to understand that, like, we know your kids are suffering. We know it's sucky. We know that you love them, but you staying up and doing the job of someone else is, like Dr. Song said, not really helping your child, because your child's insomnia may be because you're not sleeping. And it should certainly be everybody should be turning off their Wi-Fi at night if you have to use it. But again, it's like your kids are feeling it. Your partner feels it. Mm-hmm. So I just want to really bookend, highlight what you just said. It's just so critical in my experience to healing. And also as a father of a daughter who's 13, has at this moment and has gone through different things, it's really hard, because I will say at one point in her life, she had a fever that was 3 weeks in duration. She had been in and out of the doctor. Everybody's got their heads up their asses, and I'm not going to be nice about it anymore, because we told them what was wrong. They were like, oh, no, no. And of course, then she passes out, ends up in the ER with anemia and, you know, low blood oxygen. They're threatening blood transfusions, but no one can get an IV line because she's all clamped down. And she had acute babesiosis 3 weeks, you know, after a field trip. But nobody wanted, they were like, literally would do every workup except for Lyme. So I get the pain and the suffering behind it, because eventually I had to be the doctor who said, no, it's actually this. I ordered the test and I was right. But I'm in a unique situation. Mm-hmm. But after that, I drove some of the treatment, but we also partnered with other doctors who were not supposed to be the acute pediatrician person. And I let them guide me, because I can't be objective or as objective, even as a physician, as I'd like with my own family, because I love them so much. And so I'm just saying, like, take a step back. And one of the things you can do to love on your kids the most is to step back and actually just be their parent and hire someone to be, whether it's through your insurance or you got to pay for it, just go to someone who kicks ass at doing this, because that will, and let them guide the ship, and then just you make sure that they don't go astray, like too far away from your family philosophy. But man, love on your kids by giving yourself a break and loving on yourself first, so you can show up and actually be their mom or their dad.
That's such a good point. And I will say, and I get it. I mean, if my kid were, you know, chronically ill, I'm sure I would be, you know, online looking up as many things as I could. And yet, you know, as Tom just said, it's really important that you have a guide and a champion. And, you know, there's not one doctor that's going to have all the answers for your child, probably, right? I mean, I work with a lot of different colleagues, and I would never say that I have all the answers for every single kid. That's just, and if anybody tells you that, I would find another doctor, right? Because not one person has all the, there's so many different modalities that may be a benefit. However, you do want someone who can be your guide and your champion and help to organize all of that care too, right? Because I have some families who they see multiple practitioners, and you know, I'm not made aware of a lot of what they're doing until a problem happens, and I'm like, well, I'm not sure exactly, you know, what happened here, right? And in terms of, you know, DIYing your treatment or your child's treatment, I get that some families don't have access to an integrative physician, and it is so easy to order a lot of these functional tests now on your own. I will say, whether you're trying to piece it together yourself or working with a practitioner, it's really important when you have a plan that you stick with it for a good chunk of time before you say it's not working. I mean, unless things are really unraveling, you know, but really, you know, if you don't see any improvements in a week, that's not enough time, right? If you don't see improvements in 2 weeks, that's not enough time. I mean, you got to give it a month, two, three to see, okay, where are we? Let's start here. Let's look back at 2 or 3 months at where we were then and where we are now. And you might see, okay, we're in a better place, right? But just because something doesn't work instantly, I see too many families hopping from one thing to another without giving something a solid chance. So that's where I would say, you know, it doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be, you know, one of us. We want you guys to find a practitioner that you trust that and can be with you through the ups and downs. Because, you know, as we all know, sometimes you find the right treatment, but things get a little worse before they get better. And you want someone who can be there and say, it's okay, right? We're gonna get through this worsening and we're gonna come out the other end. But you gotta be consistent, right? Be patient. There's no quick fixes here.
Yeah, I think we are all in agreement on that point. It's like, it just, you know, even with kids, with adults, you know, especially with Lyme and these co-infections, you know, these are stubborn critters. And, you know, we're not just dealing with the critter, we're dealing with this whole plethora of immune dysfunction and gut problems and toxicity. And so, you know, we're constantly, you know, trying to figure out for you, you know, what are the different layers of the onion we need to keep peeling back. And, you know, everything we implement gives us more information, you know, your response, positive or negative, you know, gives us more information about whether we're on the right track, whether we need to dig deeper, look at other possibilities. And, you know, I know that we've had this conversation with so many speakers in the summit, you know, we never hang our hat that it's just Lyme. You know, it's almost never just Lyme. There's all these other underlying issues that we need to address, but that's where the real healing begins. You know, when we are able to, like I said, look at the gut, the microbiome, the diet, all these other factors, you know, that's the foundational stuff. And then from there, you know, all of our other protocols and treatment plans, you know, start to get tailored to you to really figure out what's going to help get your child better sooner.
I was just going to say, this has been such an amazing conversation, and like, I'm sure it can go on forever. But you know, it's one of these things where I think that like so much of the reason we actually wanted to do this summit together and to bring Dr. Elisa Song in here with us is what we've covered here. And it's like to actually give you back the power to help not only your child, but yourself to heal. Or if it's your, all of the things that we've talked about today are totally applicable to adults who don't have children, because we all have friends and family. We all have people we're interacting with. And all of these things really go to the more you take care of yourself, and you have to put yourself first. Now, as a parent, we know that sometimes putting yourself first means your kids first the whole day. But if we're not feeding ourselves and our own hearts and nourishing ourselves mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, how the heck can you show up as a 50% well, you know, like if you're just so stressed out on that far end of that performance curve that Dr. Elisa talked about, and you're all burnt out, how can you show up and actually model healing for your child? How can you even be there to help them with the stress that they're feeling from their protocol? So this has just been such an amazing and conversation, Elisa, and just so much gratitude for you being here and participating. It's always an honor to chat with you. So, and Dr. Darren, it sounded like you had a bunch of stuff to say as well, too.
No, I said, I think this is such an important conversation, you know, particularly for kids. You know, this is the future generation. We want to take care of them the best we can. I think, you know, we're fighting against an environment that's just kind of getting worse every year. So as much as we can do is help the health of our kids improve, you know, that just helps future generations. And Elisa, I know so many people are going to want to connect with you after watching this. And I know you got a new book coming out too. So what's the best way for people to find you?
So the best way is going to be on my healthykidshappykids.com blog site. And also Instagram is healthykids_happykids. As Tom mentioned, I mean, I don't send out a lot of newsletters. I don't like fluff. I don't like filling people's inboxes with fluff. So everything I write is very purposeful and intentional. So that's another great way to keep up to date with some of the information that I share. And I, you know, I'm so glad that you guys are putting on this summit. I'm so glad that we're having this conversation because it's not just for parents. It's also for caretakers, your partner, you know, who's helping you, right? We want to make sure, yes, we're in the business of getting your kid or, you know, you well, but we also want to make sure that if you're the caretaker, that you are well enough that you can run around and you know, be happy and do all the fun things when your partner, your kids are well, right? So think about that too, right? We want to hold this vision of where you as the patient and you as a caretaker want to be when the healing has taken place, right? Because you guys come together.
Well, as a good friend of all of ours said in one of the conversations I had, because we all speak the same language. It's like the healing is in the living. And I just remember, my father was quite ill before passing away. And my mom caring for him actually did kind of the opposite of what you just said, Elisa. And she focused solely on him. And we were actually about to have a family intervention to get her to take care of herself because she was declining, like literally like really bad. But afterwards, when the healing was able to occur, she was able to rebound, thankfully. But I just think what you're saying is so key. I want everybody to live as if it had already happened. And so that's really what we're talking about in the summit. So, always bringing the love and the smiles and the amazing information. So everyone, send out a lot of love to Dr. Lisa Song. And the reason I wanted to dovetail a little to that was healthy kids, happy kids, right? It wasn't like you separated both of those two words. Knowing you, the two words are very purposeful. So go check out healthykidshappykids.com. We'll make sure we have, if there's any new things from the time we're recording to when this comes out, it'll all be on our summit resource page for everyone. So Dr. Lisa Song, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been an honor. And I'd love to see you guys whenever I can. So this has been my honor.
And everyone, I'm Dr. Tom Moorcroft, and together with our co-host, Dr. Darren Engels, we'd like to thank you for being here with us for this episode of the Healing from Lyme Disease Summit. And until next time, just lead your life with love and lots of health and healing to all of you.